The Guardian.
During April, The Guardian's podcasts are partnering with audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/audible to find out more.
Football Weekly Extra.
Today, we salute Roberto Di Matteo. 2 months ago, he was in charge of putting out the cones. Now, he's busy putting out Barcelona, with a Chelsea side that weren't so much fired up for the game as stoked. We look back on Wednesday's win and Tuesday's semi too and ask, Bayern victory over Real Madrid, massive new Bundesliga TV deal, how big can German football get? That's not all. There's Premier League previews, restoration comedy with the return of the Royals, Serie A and more in Football Weekly. With that said, let's get going. Hey, Jacob Steinberg.
Hello, James.
Hey, James Horncastle.
Hey.
Hey. And hey, Raphael Honigstein.
Hey, hey, hey.
Yeah, absolutely. You're fresh from two semi-finals in 2 days, but I'm not going to start with you. I'm going to start with Jacob Steinberg over here.
Why?
Who's been so troubled by Big Sam's tribulations there at Upton Park that he's actually gone over to the other side. And you attended your first Chelsea game yesterday.
No, not my first Chelsea game. I've been to many Chelsea games.
All right, your first Champions League
Champions League knockout game. I once went to Arsenal v Rosenborg.
Anyway, you went to Stamford Bridge last night.
Yeah, I did. I was at Stamford Bridge.
Were you working?
No, I was just in the Chelsea end.
As a fan?
Of Barcelona.
Ooh, yeah. All right then.
Yeah. I got handed a plastic flag, though.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah. By a guy next to me who had a seeming endless stockpile of them. Collecting them.
That's because they got passion at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
Endless passion.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, apart from the plastic flags, all right, what did you think then as a neutral?
I thought that Barcelona were incredibly wasteful, really, and if any other game, maybe, that could have ended up 4 or 5 nil. Chelsea scored with their only shot on target. The only other times they really threatened were the throw-ons from Ivanovic, who Paul Doyle saw him minute by minute was calling him Dilapovic. That, you know, Chelsea were causing a lot of trouble when they were chucking the ball in. And
hang on, Chelsea fans.
It's the only way that you can play against Barcelona, though. I think you can't take them on in a game of football because they'll beat you, won't they? It's the way that Inter played them, and it's the way that Real Madrid play against
them. If Big Sam came out with talk like this with a stab, you and the other Hammer fans would be pillorying him for his unromantic,
it's
pragmatic.
It's easily forgotten that Inter actually beat them 3-1 at home before they hit and had this terrible Catenaccio game in the second leg and did actually really have a go, and that's why they beat them that year.
Would you like to say, well done, Chelsea?
Of course you have to say well done, Chelsea. Mm-hmm. I think Peter Cech in the mix on afterwards summed it up really beautifully with a bit of a nonchalant smile. He said, we did what we could have done, which I think is both fair and perhaps a sense of, you know, this Chelsea team can't really do anything else.
But more important than Chelsea doing what they could have done was the fact that Barcelona didn't do what they could have done.
Yeah, they didn't. Although I had the sense from what they said after the game and Guardiola's demeanour that they felt that, you know, if they could play exactly the same game again, they would win it. There wasn't really a sense of, you know, everything has to change, we need to do things really differently. All the sort of stuff that usually managers come out with when they lose the first leg in a Champions League final. It's like, no, we just have to do exactly the same again. Yes, I said we need to be a bit more efficient in front of goal, perhaps work a little bit harder. I also agree with Jacob that I think in the first half, Barcelona were perhaps a little bit indulgent when it came to their own game, but also when it came to taking their chances. But on the whole, it's difficult to see that kind of tactic paying off too many times.
Well, the other night there, Fabregas puts in the open goal, or Busquets does, and you know, as I think you said
ref
last night, we'd all be talking.
Cahill.
Ref
gives a penalty on Cahill
for what?
When he bundled over Iniesta in the box, that would be the one I'm thinking of.
I didn't think that was a penalty. That was, but
knock someone over in the box generally.
I don't know. I think it went down pretty easily. I think, you know, Ribery style. But
three lines at the back.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Play this game again. They will get the chance next week. And Arsenal, of course, took a 1-goal lead to Barcelona in last year's Champions League and got knocked out all the same. What do you see happening, James?
Well, I think going back to the Inter comparison, yeah, I mean, we have to remember that this was Chelsea's home leg, and I think in 2010 Inter took a lot more risks in the home leg, and like Rafa just intimated, I think because they had that cushion, they could afford to play Catenaccio, afford to be really organised and maybe concede only one at the Nou Camp. Whereas, to give Chelsea credit, I mean, I think they've scored in every game thus far in the Champions League, and there's something quite endearing about this Chelsea side in that for years under Abramovich, there's been expectations around them. They've been expected to get into Champions League semi-finals because of the money they've spent. And yet this Chelsea side kind of knows its own limits. Yeah, I don't think a lot of people actually think they're going to get this far. People look at the team and have written it off, but you know, they've gone back to the Chelsea way, and you've got to say, well, it's working for them, isn't it? I don't think you can be really too... There's some outstanding performances there last night at the back from Cahill, Terry and Cole, who, again, his goal line clearances this season in the Champions League in particular against Napoli in that first leg. I think yesterday from Fabregas, he then nudged the Pedro chance onto the post. Yeah, again... sort of backs to the wall, quite admirable, really.
Right. No, an unfortunate turn of phrase, given the subject matter. Rafael, or should I go?
Well, actually, Cole was hugely impressive. I think he was best performer on the pitch of both teams. And Cech had a fantastic game. You know, he's been written off over the years, and he really came good for them.
Cech's been written off.
Exactly.
Hey.
He bounced back. On the whole, they were. You know, they were as good as they could be, and it wouldn't be the first time that a team that is very clearly past its sell-by date then somehow gets themselves worked up for the Champions League and actually lifts the trophy. I mean, in the European Cup in days gone by, that would happen all the time.
I see the script as that. Surely they win the Champions League, finish fifth, but knock Tottenham out of the automatic places for the playoff
places. It's definitely possible.
You've got two teams who are, at this moment in time, with an advantage, Bayern and Chelsea, who are out of the title races. I think you have to ask the question, to what extent is the grind of the title race in La Liga taking a toll on both Barca and Real Madrid? Because I think Messi and Ronaldo were quite underwhelming in both games. They've got the Clasico in this weekend, which I think they have to be fully committed to that. So that's going to give teams Chelsea and Bayern another good.
Yeah, but I think that with Barcelona, as we said last night, 99 times out of 100, they will win that game. Messi, a lot of the time in England, doesn't really play that well, and people start saying, oh, Messi's not that good. And then, after two games against Arsenal the last 2 years, he didn't do anything really. They go back to the Nou Camp. He scores two goals last year. Their record at the Nou Camp is just impeccable. Chelsea's record away from home in Europe is fairly poor, apart from the Benfica win. They'd gone more than a year without winning away from home in Europe, and they'd lost a few... they'd lost to Leverkusen and drawn with Genk. And last night, the feeling I had after about 5 minutes was they kind of declared at 0-0, and to get the goal was just an unexpected bonus. And when they got the ball, it was kind of a minor event for them. The fans, when Barcelona had the ball in the right-back or left-back position, it was just let them stroke it around. When Chelsea got it, when Ashley Cole had it, the fans were going, right, we can score now, this is a chance to score.
There was a wonderful line from Drogba in the mix zone. He was wearing a really strange handmade top, but that's not the point. The point was that he said every time he had the ball, he felt like the goal was somewhere along the M25. He felt so far away from the goal mouth.
Very nicely put. A couple of posts here. Johnny Late among those saying, now we know how Barcelona would fare against Stoke on a wet Wednesday night. Tim Okonowo says, why Barcelona not figured out a way to beat English teams in away legs minus last year's final, which wasn't really an away leg because their record was it? Lost six visits to London apart from the Wembley final. They've only won once.
I think they get a bit indulgent sometimes. They're against Arsenal.
Is it just
times.
That, or is that something that English teams do to them?
Well, I think Chelsea, in a way, that they are slightly respectful of Chelsea. I think they didn't want to commit too much forward. And that Chelsea, Barcelona's had made 814 passes. Chelsea scored with a move that, all it took was two passes to score against them. They didn't want to commit too much forward, I think. But last year against Arsenal, they kind of took their foot off the gas. Same against same the year before when they were 2-0 up, somehow managed to draw 2-2. And last night, they in front of goal, they were just incredibly wasteful.
Mm. All right. Well, let's go on to the other semi-final then. Barcelona, no away goal for them, but Real Madrid did get what could prove a crucial scoring strike there at the Allianz Arena. But in other regards, an excellent night for Bayern Munich. Hey, Rafa.
Certainly an excellent night, an excellent result. And I'm not sure personally how relevant that away goal is anymore in European football. You know, because of the Champions League, because teams go to big grounds all the time and they go to games in a group stage, just not thinking about away goals, but just thinking of drawing or winning, I don't really see the significance.
But it counts double, Rafa.
It counts double if Real Madrid win 1-0, and really that's the only result when the away goal matters. Any other result, it doesn't matter.
Well, still quite handy.
The obsession about the away goal came from a time when if you won 4-0 at home and then conceded one, you'd think, oh my God, we're going to get hammered. You know, and teams like Real Madrid would lose 5-1 at Mönchengladbach and turn them over 4-0. And, you know, these kind of big swings were almost expected in European football. You went once in a lifetime, you went to the Bernabeu, once in a lifetime, you went to the Nou Camp. You didn't know what you'd expect. You were overawed by the atmosphere. Now, you know, these teams play each other hundreds of times in a space of a few years. And I just don't see this big, see it as a big factor anymore.
All right, then. What was the atmosphere like in the Allianz Arena?
It was a great atmosphere, but there was a real sense of awe every time Real Madrid went forward because they played quite intelligently. I think Benzema was absolutely superb, the way he moved and the way he controlled the ball. He was wonderful. And there was a bit of apprehension. And it was this really nervy, in German you say a ride on a razor's edge kind of atmosphere. And it was great, a great game. With a nice twist in the end from a Bayern perspective.
From a Bayern perspective, I read Jonathan Wilson's piece explaining why Real Madrid lost at Bayern, and it was all Ronaldo's fault.
Yeah, I'm not sure there is a reason why Real Madrid lost the game. The reason was that Contraro, you know, switched off in the 90th minute, and Lahm had a burst of energy and made that goal. And for once, Gomez, he himself doesn't know quite how, because he didn't see the ball, actually, he confirmed, bundled it over.
But he had plenty of chances before that, didn't
he? He had plenty of chances, and he didn't actually play very well. No. But my point is, you know, this is a game a little bit like yesterday, but perhaps even more open in terms of results. Could have easily gone 1-1, it could have gone 3-1, it could have gone 2-1 to Real Madrid.
Really?
And yeah, absolutely. And I just don't think that there was enough between the two teams to suggest that, you know, this is the reason why Bayern won, or this is the reason why Real Madrid lost.
Okay. I have to say that Jacob and I, for example, are from our safe advantages by the television sets.
I thought that
Bayern had this one under control, no?
Pretty much. I think for the first 10 minutes or so, there was that awe that you speak of when Real had the ball. But it all switched, I thought after Ribery tried to get that penalty. And after that, it was just really... It wasn't, you know, absolute dominance, but they were the better team.
Some very good spells, I thought. I thought Bayern had the better spells where they looked like scoring, particularly between that 15 and 25 minute mark where they were switching the play really quickly to Robin. Robin was running at Contrao. They had a series of chances where you just thought... I switched my TV off of that game and thought...
when?
Afterwards, thinking that Bayern deserved it, but they probably came out of that game thinking they deserved more. I thought particularly in that final 10 minutes where Lahm eventually got across through to Gomez and he scored. He'd had two previous before that where Gomez had headed over the bar and then he'd headed it into Casillas' arms, where you thought they were makeable chances. Not great chances, but
I think you're right. I mean, they had tremendous spells, but equally when Real Madrid equalised, they really controlled the game to an extent that you felt this is... It had a sense of it being all over. There weren't really any clear-cut chances in the last 15-20 minutes before the goal. I think Mourinho was right in the sense that it came out of context a little bit when the goal actually came. And before the game, everyone had talked about Bayern needing a perfect match from everyone and collectively, and they didn't quite have that. I mean, lots of players didn't turn up. Schweinsteiger had a terrible game, was substituted, still not fully fit, and, you know, without him, Bayern lose a lot of their composure and their possession in the middle of the pitch. Gomez, as I said, I think was quite poor. Müller, when he came on, was not a factor. Robin was defensively trying a lot, and, you know, he was full of running, but didn't really have any clear-cut actions going forward. So that's what I mean. I mean, I don't look at a Bayern performance and think, you know, this is a really well-deserved, never-in-doubt win, because it was just too close for that.
But having said that, and of course, second legs, anything could happen in the next games next week. But has this been the week that these two colossuses of the Spanish Liga have faced decent opposition in Europe and actually been a little bit put in perspective?
Well, Barcelona did beat Milan in the last round.
Yeah, this is a fairly weak Milan side. And Milan, actually, it was interesting, Lampard saying we'd seen what Milan did and we tried to model a little bit our game plan on the way the Rossoneri had approached Barcelona. And Milan had terrific opportunities to score a goal against Barca in the home leg, and then, of course, got a bit dismantled in the second one. So, I don't know, I just wonder if maybe we think too much of Barca and Real, and maybe a little bit this was a truer impression of their relative strengths.
Well, I think we'll see after the second leg.
We'll wait till then, eh?
I think there's a very good chance that Barcelona turn this over quite comprehensively.
And Real?
I think that game is close, because the goal changes everything, and that's why it goes...
The second one,
yeah. because that's really my point going back to the away goal. I mean, they still have the away goal, but the fact that Bayern can now draw and go through makes an absolute enormous difference.
All right, then. Well, that's it for part one. In part two, we're going to be moving on to Premier League stuff. Now, next up for Roberto Di Matteo's incredible Chelsea juggernaut is a trip to the Emirates. You'll be going along to that, will you, with your plastic Chelsea flag, Jacob?
No, I'll be watching it at home.
All right, then. Now, hey, how about this one? Big game, of course, for that race for the top four, top three, top something. Arsenal, of course, in third place. Fresh from that humbling by Wigan, of which we'll speak in a second or two. Arteta going off injured. So big problems in the midfield.
Yeah, I don't think they've won a Premier League game without him in the team. I think I think their win ratio is like 76% with him in it, and then zero with him out.
So zero.
The rest is obviously
a lot of that was down to the having no defence in January, I think. So,
all right, they don't have him there, and no Wilshere, of course, and no Benny Yoon because he's owned by Chelsea in that silly loony rule. So, what about it? Chelsea, in the meantime, coming off a tough night in the Champions League. What do you think? Can they get the result? Can they get revenge for that defeat at Stamford Bridge?
I think it would be very hard for them. I think mentally, Lampard made a great point that it's really, really exhausting to play against Barcelona, not just for your legs, because if you sit so deep as they did in the second half, you don't actually run a lot. But up here...
Ralph is pointing to his head.
Yeah, it's really, really hard to... stay switched on while the opposition just hog the ball. It's the most, probably the most difficult thing in football.
It's like a ride on a razor's edge, I like to call it. Anyway.
The ride on the razor's edge suggests that it's a little bit more even-sided. It could fall either way.
Yeah.
If you're watching someone else putting the knife to your throat, it's not so much of a ride, but just hoping that
razor to your wrist,
that they won't cut it.
Right, okay. All right,
and I think that might work against them, because Arsenal will, of course, monopolise possession as well. At least they'll try to, and they'll probably play Torres instead of Drogba. So, I think Arsenal, especially after that Wigan setback, will have a point to prove, and will probably be a bit too much for them.
But if you've beaten kind of Barcelona A, can't you easily beat Barcelona B? You just put the same players out and tell them to get on with it.
It's true. But Jacob made the point. You know, if you do that again, if you just hope that they'll hit the post and not score, and that Cech will make all his saves, and that Ashley Cole will clear off the line again, it's not really a great strategy. I mean, for wins every week.
Robin van Persie's in a goal-scoring drought. Just that one goal, a penalty as well, in the last six games now for the goal-shy Dutchman. Plus, he was seen coming out of Barcelona's hotel the other night. Ooh,
there was that big story, I think, in the Daily Mail. They where is he off to? Is he off to Barcelona? Wait, he was talking to Ibrahim Afellay, his mate.
I'm sure he was.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was in the Barcelona hotel.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, there you go. So we're all saying it's an Arsenal win?
I think Arsenal will be too strong, yeah.
I think they generally raise their game against Chelsea, certainly. But, yeah, you can't tell after that QPR defeat and the Wigan defeat, to be fair.
Mm, that's true. What about the Wigan defeat? They're now five clear. Wigan, they're going to be at Fulham this week. It would be typical of football, wouldn't it, if they went and stuffed it up at Craven Cottage after beating Man United and Arsenal?
Yeah, I quite like Wigan. A lot of people were slagging them off because they brought some 200 fans down on a Monday night.
Who was having a go?
There's a lot on Twitter, wasn't there, saying this isn't a real club. But there's a tiny club that's come from nowhere, in surrounded by two, you know, to Manchester clubs and Liverpool, Everton, and then there are so many other clubs in the northwest.
Yeah, and a lot's made of it being a rugby town, but they get bigger gates than Wigan, the rugby league team.
Right? Do they get bigger gates than Fulham? I wonder.
Probably not. I've been at the DW with about 5,000 other people before. Mm. So yeah, it can be very, very lonely there.
But right. But terrific football.
Really, really good. This formation that he's playing, the 3-4-3 or whatever you want to call it, with no fullbacks, just and Bo Sejour, who was awful at Birmingham, playing really well, and Victor Moses is absolutely unplayable on Monday night.
Uninterviewable as well, I thought.
Obviously.
Yeah. But no, he was brilliant on the field.
Yeah, I think the skill to get past Sanya for the second goal, that was woof.
Well, it's all very interesting. Wigan at Fulham, as I mentioned. Now, Spurs are at QPR. Now, that's going to be an interesting game, isn't it? Spurs obviously caught up in that race for top four status with Arsenal and Chelsea and, of course, Newcastle. But QPR, ooh, they're dangerous at home. Dangerous. Spurs, they've had one win in their last eight games in the Premier League. They've been knocked out of the FA Cup. Is further misery in store for the Lily Whites there at Loftus Road?
Quite possibly. Three wins in a row for QPR, including beating Liverpool.
What, at home?
Yeah, at home.
Oh, okay.
And they beat Liverpool and Arsenal, obviously, and Spurs in a horrible run of form. It's a hard place to go, especially if the crowd get up for it. It's a really tight ground, and you know they can stop you playing if they're on their game as well. So,
how do you pick yourself up off the floor after that semi-final defeat? I don't know. Spurs, I think, have got quite a good record at Loftus Road, but that's going back because they haven't played them for a long time.
But this could be the weekend then, because Newcastle are at home to Stoke. That Newcastle could move past them back into the top four. Newcastle have won their last five games, conceding just one goal in that entire period.
Yeah, and they'll see this as a huge opportunity because of Chelsea's tough fixture. You know, they can really make some progress. And I think if they'll ever realistically challenge for that Champions League spot, they'll need to do it this weekend.
All right, there you go.
Of course, be a tough game for themselves.
It's a tough game as well for QPR, that Spurs one, because you've got Bolton behind them. QPR currently out the bottom three, but Bolton behind them have two games in hand, and they'll be playing one of those this weekend. They're at home to Swansea, I think, are they not?
Bolton.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Well, that's a big game, isn't it? Yeah. They've had consecutive defeats in the last two matches, Bolton. They're going to dig themselves out of trouble there? They had that little burst of energy and after the Mwamba thing, and inspired by that, they went on a bit of a run. But, defeats Newcastle and Fulham. Yeah. Anyway, and Blackburn. Oh, I'm a bit worried about them. They're at home to Norwich. And, you know, all this time we've been saying, well, Blackburn, they've got problems. But at least they're united. At least they're all fighting together, team spirit, etc. But now you've got the manager calling out defender Gael Jive, saying he refused to go on the pitch, and Jive calling out the manager saying, I never said any such thing, and the fans are planning a march before the game.
In whose favour?
Anti Keane, I'm guessing.
Again?
Yes. He's still there, Rafa.
So far.
Yeah. No, it's perseverance, it's consistency, it's coherence.
Mm.
Mm. But anyway, so there you go, they're at home to Norwich.
I mean, what is this anti-Keane stuff all about, honestly?
Well, their team's in the relegation zone. They think that he's not done a very
good
job.
Is it his fault, really?
Well, I don't know. They think it is.
They were mid-table when they sacked the managerial...
But that wasn't his fault.
Big Sam. What, no, them being mid table?
No,
that he was.
They're not saying it's his
that.
40s right. there. They just would like him not to be there because under him, they've gone from 13th when he took over to, what is it now, 18th?
Yeah, there's a slight suggestion that, well, I don't 19th. Think Allardyce is perhaps his biggest fan. There's a undercurrent of, he nicked my job. He was his number two, and then suddenly he was Allardyce was sacked, and then the next week he was the manager. So it was a sort of a bit iffy way that he got the job in the first place.
Iffy's the word. Other managers take quite a dim view of that whole thing. Yeah, there you go. Anyway, well, he's in all sorts of trouble. He may not be certainly in the Premier League too much longer. The way it's looking, it does look like Wolves and Blackburn might be down, and then it's. Maybe one out of QPR and Bolton. I don't know. Maybe I'm oversimplifying. Maybe Aston Villa can storm. Maybe Wigan. Who knows, eh? Now, the big question at the other end of the things is Man United and Man City for the title. Got the derby coming up.
I think it's a little question.
Is it a little
in fairness,
question?
Yeah.
I'm just wondering because Wolves host Man City this weekend. They've lost goalkeeper Wayne Hennessy, etc., etc., etc. They've lost all hope, will to live, spirit, etc. Man United are at home to Everton. Man City need them to drop a point or two. Is a draw against the informed Toffees unbeaten in four games?
I don't think Everton have won at Old Trafford since 92.
That was then, though. What about now?
It hasn't changed under Moyes, though, has it? I think whereas Moyes has a good record against City and Chelsea, when it comes to Liverpool and United, he's often seemed to be, I don't know, phased by that sort of, that whole situation. I don't think it'll change. I think it'll be a tough game. It's certainly the a banana skin potentially, but yeah. I doubt it.
Last year it took them to the 84th minute, I think, before they finally got the goal.
It was this time last year, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Hernandez scored late on, yeah.
I'm not sure. I think a draw could happen, and boy, that would set up the derby. And how.
Yeah. I mean, I was a little bit disappointed in Everton, having seen them at Wembley for the semi-final. Of course, Liverpool had a superior side and you have to adjust your tactics accordingly, but they had very little by way of actual football going for them.
Chelsea-esque, was it?
It was a bit, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the best man was playing really, really deep, Fellaini, and Cahill was anonymous. And I don't know, there might be in a bit of a forced position, I think, in the table relative to the true quality. They have commitment and they have tactical organisation and they have great spirit. And, Moyes does a great job with very limited resources. But as an actual football team, I don't think they're the seventh best team in the Premier League. I think they're quite further down.
Maybe they are, and that just says something about the Premier League.
Yeah, maybe.
Seventh for years, haven't they? So.
Yeah, that's
maybe.
True.
But it'd be interesting because, they've effectively lost their cup final, in inverted commas, last week. And what do they really have to play for now? Do they want to get in the Europa League? I'm not sure.
Above Liverpool is what they're playing for now.
Yeah, but how much of an incentive is that really for the players? I don't know. I think I said this before. I think when it gets to the time of the year when you play for nothing and then one team plays for something really big, which is, of course, happening in United's case, you always have to favour the side that is still involved in something tangible.
All right. P. Daddy says, I was surprised there wasn't a little bit more discussion on Tevez's goal celebration after his third against Norwich. I'm not a Man City fan, but I just thought it smacked of someone taking the mickey out of the fans. The thing was, they seemed to lap it up, as did his teammates and Mancini. Yeah. This was his golf swing celebration. An ironic reference to the fact that he'd done one to Argentina and taken a five-month holiday during the season while his teammates got on with it. It's a fair point that P. Daddy makes, isn't it? He came back all full of contrition, but within a week he's already going, look at me, golf, eh? Brilliant.
Yeah, because he knows that the fans ultimately, whether rightly or wrongly, don't care all that much as long as you score.
P. Daddy cares.
But I thought it was quite revealing how Lescott and De Jong came in and not only joined in but mimicked it and everything. But I think if you look at their attitude towards Tevez and towards Balotelli, I think there's that sort of reverence for Tevez because they know when he's on the pitch, he gets the job done,
right.
and he wins games. Whereas with Balotelli, it's not necessarily the case. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, but I think that's exactly the crucial point. I think that the team seem to be much more ready to forgive him for not being there than Balotelli for being there but messing things up.
Mm. All right, excellent. One other thing quickly to mention on the Premier League weekend is the fact that Liverpool host West Bromwich Albion, which pits together their two least successful managers, Liverpool's two least successful managers of the post-war period or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm making that stat up, but league. It might be true.
In the league.
In the league. Yeah. There's something there. I'm sure we can work on that one. That'd be a warm welcome for Roy.
Mr. Roy, yeah. Yeah. It'd be very funny if they're...
If they won?
Yeah. Yeah.
For some, Jacob, for some.
I mean, will Liverpool even care? I mean...
Will West Brom even care?
Hmm.
I'm not sure I'm bothered. They haven't had much to play for, have they? So.
No, yeah. Now, Jacob, speaking of riffing on other people's pain, how about West Ham missing out on the automatic promotion place? Not yet, but you're heading in that direction.
It's more or less done, yeah.
Hmm?
It's more or less done.
Okay, so Reading have gone up.
Reading have gone up.
Because West Ham only got a draw away to relegation scrappling against Bristol City.
Yes, they did.
Yep. Yep.
They were 1-0 up and... Robert Green made a mistake.
Yes.
As is his wont.
Well.
Yeah.
Anyway, so well done, Reading, eh?
Yeah, it's very, very strange because I don't think anybody at the start of the season would have expected this side to go up. They lost the playoff final last season. When that happens, you can get into a bit of a rut afterwards. It's probably the worst game that you could lose, the playoff final. It's just so, it's really, really disappointing. I mean, James, you probably know that as well. I've been at playoff finals, one playoff final, which we've lost, and it's not nice. And they lost Matt Mills, who was their best central defender, to Leicester, and Shane Long was sold in the summer. And they had a terrible start to the season. They were 21st after the first month or something.
Yeah, I think they only got 12 points from their first 10 games.
Yeah.
And they didn't invest any of their, 9 or 10 million they got for Long and Mills.
Yeah.
They only put, I think, a million or so back into the team. But, it's been a staggering sort of run they've been on.
Since they brought in Jason Roberts, seemed to be kind of the turning point.
If you compare that to, say, the strikers that West Ham have had, Allardyce brought in Carew, who scored 2 goals, Piquion has done nothing, Cole's sort of scored a few here and there, Maynard and Bulldog have not suited to the style that he plays, the two small strikers. And Jason Roberts has come in and he's changed the side, really. He didn't score when they played West Ham. I don't think he scored, but he was just really, really dangerous. Gave them a really, really good game. A defence that has played pretty well for most of the season. But even in February, when they were going on this, they went sort of 7 games in a row. They won, and I didn't think at any point, "Oh, this is a side that you've really got to be worried about." Everybody was Southampton and West Ham fans were looking to sort of Birmingham and Blackpool, who were coming up behind them. I don't think until really March time anybody thought that Reading could. Would be top of the league.
Yeah. Well, they're lovely. Do seem to be a very nice team, Reading, and they had a terrific time of it last time. They're in the first season anyway, but lots of big scorelines and that. I think it'll be fun to see them back.
They've got new investment as well.
Well, they have, haven't they? Zingarevich.
Have you seen his wife? Katia. Victoria's Secret model.
Right. Yeah. Anyway. Right. Okay. Well, that's more than enough on that. Anyway. So, it all means that West Ham currently looking as though they're destined for the playoffs, and three of Birmingham, Blackpool, Cardiff, and Middlesbrough going to join them in that.
Probably. Well, Southampton will go up if they win at Middlesbrough on Saturday.
Right. So. Okay. And Middlesbrough rubbish at home. So
pretty rubbish anyway.
Hey, West Ham. Is there any suggestion about Paolo Di Canio maybe coming in and taking charge there?
Not at the moment.
All right.
Maybe amongst the fans. But.
All right, because he's having that brilliant run at Swindon and that. I was just curious about that. Top of League 2 and all that.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, all right. Well, that's fascinating. That's it for part 2. And very shortly, Raphael's going to tell us all about the bright prospects in the Bundesliga. And Joe Torcross is going to talk about the even brighter prospects there in Italy's ever-so-bouncing Serie A. Couple of posts for you. Marky 1982-1 says, in the light of what happened to both Fabrice Mwamba and Pier Mario Morosini, can I give a quick plug to a charity called Cardiac Risk in the Young that offers free ECG tests that can detect undiagnosed heart abnormalities, especially after we discovered in Monday's pod that both Barry and Sean Ingle have murmurs going on away. So there you go. If you want to go, Cardiac Risk in the Young. There you go. Free test. PFA Player of the Year. Cryogenic says, what do you think of the nominations? What do you think of the nominations? Shocked? Depressed? Should I say who they are? Robbie Van Persie, Aguero, Johar, David Silva, Scott Parker, Rooney, and the young player, Aguero, Bale, Kyle Walker, Oxlade, Chamberlain, Welbeck, Daniel Sturridge. And no company in there. No Clint Dempsey. No Tim Krul. No Codicini. No Valencia. No Grant Holt.
No Yaya.
No Yaya Touré.
That's the biggest omission of all for me. And I was actually shocked that Aguero is only 23. I didn't realise that he's that young. But for me, one young player who's missing, and this might be a bit controversial, ooh, is actually Theo Walcott, because, you know, we're used to being so frustrated with his lack of development, and he's always sort of not quite doing what he could do. But you look at his stats, you look at his numbers, he's by far having his best ever season in the Premier League. And Oxlade-Chamberlain has played 5 games, 6? I don't know. Mm. I mean, you know, he's there just because he looks like a much more exciting name. But Theo is actually, by his standards or by anyone, finally started to deliver this season.
Mm. But can you be a young player if you've been around since 2006? It's like when James Milner won it, when he'd been playing for about 9 years.
Yeah, but I think, you know, Bale won it last year. He's not the youngest player in the world.
No, that's true. Who would you give it to, PFA Player of the Year?
Van Persie.
Would you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you can't really.
Go on, Van Persie.
RVP.
Okay, very good. Right, Bundesliga, Raphael.
Bundesliga.
Really is the coming league, isn't it? Now with 4 teams in the Champions League. And this week, announcing a massive new TV deal that represents a 52% rise on the previous one. Do you think that the spending plans of clubs, which have been notoriously kind of conservative until now, do you think that will continue? Or will we start to see big German clubs acting the same way as the big Spanish and Premier League, and to a lesser extent these days Italian clubs do?
Not just yet. I mean, first of all, what you need to remember is that this is a Bundesliga deal for the first 2 divisions. So it's 36 teams.
Ah.
So the pie is quite big, but it gets sliced a lot thinner.
Mm.
So last year, for example, I think Bayern Munich's figure stood at about something about 28 million euros as the best paid team. A 52% increase if they were to get all of that,
yeah,
and they're still figuring out which way to slice it, you know, it would leave them with 14 million euros more, which is nice, yeah, but, you know,
you're not going to buy Dzeko with that,
yeah,
are you?
If you have 25 players in the squad, you know, on average, you can all give them $500,000 more.
You know,
it's not really...
Every little helps, though.
It does, yeah, it does. But I think it will mostly help the teams a little bit further below, who can't quite generate the merchandising, the marketing income of the really big guns, or the stadium income. They are the true beneficiaries, and it'll be very interesting to see what they can do, because I think, if anything, what's let the Premier League down in terms of the quality was that the lesser teams, who have a lot of money relative to their peers in Europe, haven't really used the money very wisely in terms of how they spent it. If they spend it more intelligently, they could really grow as a league.
Oh, interesting. Will anybody be splashing their new TV money on Edin Dzeko?
I think it's a problem, because Edin Dzeko is on around about £150,000. So even if they were to give him away for free, the wages would make it almost prohibitive for him to certainly play for Dortmund, because he would completely destroy their wage structure. Even at Bayern, you know, they just signed a new deal with Mario Gomez. Do you need Dzeko as a stand-in on the same kind of money? I think it would be problematic. Everything we hear about Dzeko, and I guess it's reflected in his performances, that he is somebody who needs to have the confidence of a manager, who needs to be on the pitch all the time, knowing that even if he has 1 or 2 bad games, he'd be back in it. At Bayern, he wouldn't have that. So I just don't see it happening, unless City are so desperate to offload him that they're willing to subsidize part of his wage, which, of course, they've done before.
Yeah.
Do you think that Dzeko's actually really that good? I mean, I think I was saying last week that he's been slightly helped by the fact that he came in the same window as Carroll and Torres, and there hasn't been as much focus on the fact that he cost 27 million. I don't think he's really done it for City at all.
No, he hasn't done it, but I think with him really is a case of him not fulfilling his potential. The potential is undoubtedly there, and, you know, it wasn't a coincidence that really the whole world was after him. And City stole a march on everyone by getting him in January. Otherwise, would have come to a huge bidding war. Real Madrid were into him. Juventus came very close. He really is. If you look at Gomez, okay, scores a lot of goals. He's half the player in terms of actual skill that Dzeko is. Dzeko just doesn't at the moment get enough time, and he probably doesn't get the right system that works for him either.
In other news, Schalke announcing today that Raul, who they had talked about as maybe staying on with a kind of directorial role,
It's sad.
Is leaving.
He's leaving, yeah.
We don't know where to. some people posting and saying, can he form a partnership with Alessandro Del Piero somewhere? That'd be exciting, wouldn't it?
Well, Del Piero this week is releasing a biography called Giochiamo Ancora, Keep Playing, which is quite poignant, where he is kind of now resigned to the fact that he's leaving Juventus, even though he's been very, very important in recent weeks, albeit from the bench, scoring against Milan, scoring against Napoli, scoring against Lazio in what was what could be a title clinching sort of game. Well, look back, it's important if they do win the Scudetto. But he said, you know, he was surprised by Agnelli, who back in October told the shareholders meeting that this would be his last season. There was kind of a PR stunt to try and make that look as though Del Piero was actually behind it and said he was supportive of it. But his autobiography, he seems to suggest he wasn't behind it. And so he's gutted. He said it'll be like leaving home again. Right. So it'll be like going through the wardrobe and into Narnia. It'll be like a new level,
right,
on one of the video games that he loves to play as a kid.
Brilliant metaphors all. I really, really like that Narnia thing. I haven't finished with the Bundesliga, though. I want to ask about Arjen Robben, winking, flirting, sending little messages to the old lady.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how those quotes really came about. From what I've read...
He said, I haven't renewed my deal with Bayern Munich yet, and I'm really happy to hear of Juve's interest.
Something along those lines, yeah.
Is it going to happen, Rafa?
The providence of these quotes, they were from the Mix Zone, when Italian journalists tried to, because as you are aware, there are no more Italian clubs in the competition. So to generate a bit of an Italian colour and interest, they asked lots of players, what about coming to Italy? And Robin, being the kind of slightly mischievous man that he sometimes is, said, yeah, you know, that doesn't sound so bad and I haven't decided yet. And, you know, he's been playing that game throughout the last few weeks, just keeping Bayern on their toes a little bit, just making them sure that, you know, they're not his only option. Whereas in reality, I think at his age, you know, he's 28, he's infamously injury prone. Does he really have that many realistic options? I'm not sure. I think this is always heading towards... contract renewal with just a bit of sort of fake skirmishes to make sure that the money's right.
All right then. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll move to Italy now, even if Arjen Robben isn't, where the season gets back underway this weekend after last weekend's stop for the death of Pier Mario Morosini, and some big games. The title race, of course, we've seen Juventus going ahead of Milan. They host Roma. Roma, who are looking for a top three slot. And it's all very exciting, James.
Yeah, it was a very good game in December between Roma and Juventus. Roma took the lead very early on through Daniele De Rossi, and looked like they might be the first team to beat Juventus. They're obviously still unbeaten. The sort of intrigue at this moment in time is can Antonio Conte hold on to this slim lead, admittedly slender. I think Milan have been very harshly criticised in recent weeks, and Allegri has come to the fore trying to defend the club. I think he thinks there's a gender out there against Milan, but at the same time he's come across as being quite a whiner in the sense that he keeps referring back to the ghost goal that wasn't given when Milan faced Juventus back in February, Muntari's goal, and people kind of want to move on.
They certainly do. Milan currently 1 point behind Juve at the top of the table. They're hosting Bologna, much easier game than Juve's, which is at home to Roma. Now Roma are in this group of five teams that are looking for that top three place at the moment. Lazio are in third place. They're 4 points clear of Roma. I don't know if I'm being a little bit too over-imaginative when I say that even if Lazio qualify third, I don't think there's any guarantee we'll see them in the Champions League next season, given what's coming out currently in the big Calcio Scommessi inquiry, which has seen of late not only the owner of Siena called in for questioning. He's going to be questioned on the 26th of this month, and he's been specifically named by one of the big supergrasses in this story as having played off a couple of players from the opposition in last year's Serie B campaign. So that could be absolutely huge for Siena. But also two major Lazio players, Christian Brocchi and Stefano Mauri, both questioned at length. And there does seem to be quite strong accusations that Lazio players were involved in all of this.
Both of whom have had their contracts renewed as well, which gives an indication of the vote of confidence that the club is giving them. Lazio have been, in many respects, a revelation this season in that since Lareja took charge, they've been pretty much for 2 years now in the top four. This, for example, threatens to completely derail their championship. But more importantly, I think, obviously they could have points deducted and players facing long bans, but they just can't score at the moment. Mm. You've got Klose out for the rest of the season. The other strikers haven't scored at all since, I think, February. So I think looking to them as a possible Champions League qualifier is optimistic, but no one seems to want it anyway.
Mm. A couple of other things from this week's papers. One, what's this here, James? Clint Dempsey to Roma?
It's only just emerged. I think it was... The Italy coach Cesare Prandelli visited Trigoria, the Roma training ground, yesterday and had various talks with people. I don't know how Dempsey came up, but I think it was mentioned in reference to Italy's recent friendly against the United States when Clint scored the winner.
Mm.
Obviously, they've got American owners in Thomas Di Benedetto and James Palotta, but I think it's just a name plucked out of the air at the moment. I don't think it's necessarily where Roma want to go. I mean, you look how many strikers they've got. Osvaldo, who's done pretty good in his first season. Totti, who I think isn't dramatically similar to Clint. That's given Clint a big up, if you like. But when Totti plays in attack, he's quite similar to... And then they've got Barini. They've got Bojan, who's really kind of flopped as a bit of an impact
Pjanic.
Player. Well, yeah, Pjanic is a playmaker.
Lamela.
Mm. So they're too busy there, I think, for Clint to realistically...
That's a shame, because that'd be a terrific move. Mm. Oh, love to see that. Okay, and what about the Bunga Bunga revelations? You saw this, didn't you, Rafa? You're glazing over a little bit there, so let me offer you the image of strippers dressed as nuns. Masks.
I saw the news. I didn't actually take part.
No, I know you did. Right.
Because you looked at me and said, you saw this. Well, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't. Okay.
No.
All right. Okay. All right, then.
Stripping nuns.
Hmm?
Stripping nuns. Ronaldinho masks.
Yep. Okay. Pretty interesting, I would call it.
It sounds a bit like your 40th birthday.
Oh, if only. If only. I had Ronaldinho in a Berlusconi mask. Well, might be a little bit more Serie A news. There certainly will be lots of Spanish reaction to the week's Champions League misadventures in The Guardian's very own European video paper review, available on iTunes or on The Guardian's website every Friday morning. In the meantime, that's it for today's Football Weekly Extra Hour. So many thanks to producer Ben, Raphael Honigstein, James Horcastle and Jacob Steinberg, and you, the listener. Have a great weekend. We're back on Monday.
During April, The Guardian's podcasts are partnering with audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/audible to find out more.